Hello, I'm Mariëtte Snyman. Welcome to Calm, Clear and Helpful, a weekly podcast series on taking good care of yourself and others, introducing you to a wide range of wellness professionals keen to inform and inspire. Today's topic is hearing loss, the story of my middle ear implant. My guest is Sharona Danhauser, cognitive behavioral therapist from Richards Bay. Welcome back on the show, Sharona.
Thank you for having me, Mariëtte. Always lovely to spend time with you and your listeners.
And to our listeners, thanks for joining us. After our conversation, it will be fun question time. Sharona, would you like to introduce us to the work you do?
Mariëtte, I am an international cognitive behavioral therapist and neurolinguistics practitioner. So the long and the short of it is, I love every person's mind and brain, but more than that, I treasure their hearts. So when I sit with someone, when I work with someone, and that can be a stay-at-home mom, a home executive, it's surgeons, it's people that occupy high positions, or even teenagers that are just sometimes a little stuck. And the work I do and the love that I have is for when we feel overwhelmed and we are driven by our emotion, to really just learn the art of emotional regulation and the science of our brain. So I work with a lot of neuro coaching and I love neuroscience. And it's always to see how we just bring a person into balance so that we can make wiser decisions and try and remain calm. And a lot of times when I sit with parents who have teenagers, it's to teach them the strategies on how to navigate life, how to regulate your own emotions, how to figure out what brings you into balance before you try and tell your teenager to do that. So that is really in short. I love working with individuals, but I also work in the corporate world when I help leaders to deal with conflict and just to try and figure out the dynamics of their teams.
Thank you. Now, you and I recorded a previous podcast where you spoke about the stroke that caused your hearing loss. And now it's more than 4 years later, after the stroke, and you've had a middle ear implant, which is the first time I've ever heard about this. And so far, it has proved a great success, hasn't it?
It really has. And you weren't the first one to hear about a middle ear implant. I was also, it was the first time that I'd heard about it. I was quite devastated. I wasn't a cochlear implant candidate. So I think we're going to journey through that process. And yes, when the surgeon told me, you know what, you're not a candidate for cochlear, but you are a candidate for the middle ear implant, I was devastated because I thought, oh my goodness, what is this about? And is this new? And yes, it is relatively new. So it was a big shock to me as well. But in hindsight, now, a few months later, I have not look back, not for one moment. It has been a resounding success.
That is wonderful. And I'm going to ask you many questions about this journey. But I wanted to start with, why are you willing to share the lessons and the learning and the whole process?
Mariëtte, when I lost my hearing, my world became very small and I lost all hearing to my left ear. And I have a little bit of hearing to my right. And just to give you some insight and to give the listeners some insight, is I've always had ear problems. So when I was born, already my ears were a challenge to my parents. I was born in a small town, Oranjemund, in Namibia. And due to me constantly needing clinical intervention, my parents actually moved to South Africa. So I've always had challenges with my ears. And as a child, I remember constant infections to my left ear specifically. And as I grew older, eventually my right ear also started giving challenges. And I had a complete mastoidectomy 20 years ago. So ear problems and challenges are nothing new to me. And of course, I already had significant hearing loss, but I was able to navigate life really well. And then one day I woke up and that's the stroke we're going to discuss. And my hearing was gone in my left ear, and my right ear, which only had a little bit of hearing, all of a sudden was what I needed to navigate life with. And throughout the process, my world became small. My challenges became more. I felt exceptionally isolated. So in sharing this journey, my heart is that whoever's listening to this will feel and hear hope. I know that there are different strategies and this wonderful new science, and to start asking the right questions and seeing the right people. And that is why I'm willing to just sit and have this conversation with you and the listeners.
I'm very grateful. Let's start with a stroke. Could you tell us what happened?
I went to bed. It was a normal evening. I woke up the next morning very early, and I immediately knew something was very, very wrong. I remember trying to wake my husband, and I was still trying to tell him something is very wrong. And as I lifted my head, I had vertigo so severely that it felt like I was falling out of the bed. And as I lifted my head, the nausea and the vomiting and everything just was, it was in 3D, and pain to my head like I can't express, a tremendous pressure, a pain. I couldn't get to the bathroom on my own because you have to lean against the wall. And after a few minutes, because I've got this history with my ears, I don't just overreact. And I just thought, oh no, I think I've got ear infection. That was the first thing that came to mind, because now all of a sudden I can't hear anything, because when my husband started talking to me, I looked at him and I said to him, I can't hear you. And then as I said, I can't hear you, my voice sounded really funny. And I looked at him and I said, why do I sound this way? And he's like, but you sound fine. And I go, but no, something's really wrong. And my husband got me back in bed. I immediately started drinking the medication that I know I can drink for vertigo. So I just started treating it like an infection, like an ear infection. And I still thought, let me just let my ear and the inflammation calm down. I know how to treat ear infections. And then I'll give it some time before I go and see my ENT. And this here was the biggest mistake I made, because I should have. And this is what I want people to hear. That if you wake up and you had hearing, and you wake up and you don't have hearing, you need to get to the emergency room immediately. Because if I had, there would have been a greater chance of me not having lost my hearing completely, because they immediately ascertain there's three reasons why you could just instantly lose your hearing. The one is a viral infection. The second one is a tumor. And the third one is a stroke. Now, if there's any form of blood clot or any reason that it's not a virus or it's not a tumor, then they can inject your ear with cortisone. And that can start working. So it is a medical emergency, and I didn't treat it as such. And that is the one regret I had, because I just thought, you know what, this is just another episode. And I actually left it for 2 full days before I thought, I cannot live like this anymore. Something's wrong. And by the time I had my MRI, it was too late. The damage was already done, and it's irreversible then. So may that be a big lesson. Have actually had two, what they call ear strokes. And the second one, I immediately knew. And the second one, I actually felt even worse. And Marietta was devastated. The second one really bowled me over. It was 11 months after the first one. And the good thing is, and I remember still telling my husband, well, you can't go deaf in the same ear twice. But the bad thing was, I had this tremendous noise in my head, and it was so difficult to explain. And I'm not talking about the ringing in your ear. I'm not talking about the standard tinnitus. I'm talking about distortion in my head, so that when I speak, and I could never hear my voice again, even after the first stroke, but the second stroke just created this noise, this hum, this popping, this slurring. So the moment any noise or sound came into my ear, it distorted. So whether I'm speaking, even though I can't hear my voice, the sound waves are hurting my head. And it was horrible. And I remember, even though I'm a cognitive behavioral therapist and I have people coming to see me for strategies on learning how to deal with tinnitus and how to work through this, I just often would tell myself and ask myself, how do you live like this? You know, I'm not yet 50, I'm close to 50, but how do I live like this for the rest of my life with this nonstop noise and pain in my head? Because the sound would hurt my head. And it was difficult for me. I felt very isolated, because it felt like my specialist didn't truly comprehend and understand when I explained this to him. And I think the only time I felt heard, which is quite a pun, was, you really need to connect with a good audiologist. You really, really need to connect with a good audiologist. So this ear stroke is not as common, but it's not common, if that makes sense. If you read up about it on Google, it will tell you, no, it's quite common. But that's not to say that in your town with the specialist that you see, it might not be common, and it might be something that they've also only experienced once or twice. And they're not going to have all the answers, but the way you need to advocate for yourself is vital. And this is the conversation that we can have. This is how we help our listeners to say that, I woke up and I couldn't hear. There's something very wrong. Please have a look. Is it a viral infection? They are going to want to send you for an MRI if they don't request one. And then say, okay, what is my next steps in my treatment? How can we help save my hearing? When you're at hospital, already reach out to an audiologist, because it's an entire team that you need, and they tend to want to work separately, and that's not how you're going to save your hearing, or that's not how you're going to journey after an incident such as this. So I'm trusting that this is already a first insight into just these critical moments. You've got such a short time of really trying to get medical intervention. Grab it. Don't second guess it. Go to the ER and tell them, this is what's happened. I could hear, I can't hear. Please help me immediately get an ENT and help me get to my audiologist. So this is the first steps that you're needing to do to try and save your hearing.
Yes, that certainly is an insight. And can you tell us more about the way the stroke and hearing loss affected the way you functioned in the world?
Hugely. So there's such a cognitive overload when you are trying to. So in the work that I do, I'm physically sitting in front of people every day. I can control the environment. So in my practice, it's nice and quiet. I've become a professional lip reader the last 4 years. I can sit at a distance and I can see someone and I can read their lips. But with that, I was exhausted. So by half past two, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it just felt like I can't see another person. And that's a one-on-one. So my social life became non-existent. I could only visit with friends in a home environment. The moment someone invited me to a restaurant or a coffee bar, I would just tell them straight off the bat, I'm sorry, I won't be able to go there. The noise, because it would distort in my head, I would have such severe pain and I would be so overstimulated that I couldn't cope. And in the work that I do, I also have to speak at many events. So when I'm on stage, it's easy because you can control it. You're speaking to your audience, but afterwards the audience wants to come and speak to you. And I find myself more and more going from speaking at many events in a year, trying to minimize those events, because I knew that after an hour and a half, I would need to to get into the most quiet possible place. And I know that my head would be so sore from all the noise. So you become very isolated. Your world becomes very small. The challenges with watching TV is huge. So I'm an extrovert with the work I do, but I'm a born introvert. I'm forced to be an extrovert, but I'm 100% an introvert. Both my husband and I, we charge our batteries at home. We don't need other people to make us energized. So we love watching a movie and a good documentary, and many programs don't have captions or subtext and titles. And I would feel so frustrated, and I would like, I cannot hear or understand what they're saying. So eventually we could only watch programs that have subtitles. I have an amazingly supportive husband who has supersonic hearing, which is just the most ironic thing. So here we're having to put the TV really loud for me to be able to discern speech. And there's a big difference between speech and sound. So the sound is loud, it's distorting in my head, but I still can't hear the speech. Mm. And my brain and the connection to speech started becoming dissonant. And that was where I was becoming very sad. So you asked me, how did it impact my life? It became very difficult for me to emotionally regulate. And that's the very thing I'm a specialist in. And I'm very proud to say that I help people regulate emotions, but I was struggling. I would find myself ever so often just becoming blue. I would say I was never depressed, but there were days that were just heavier than others. And I'm grateful that I was able to shift perspective. But in that, it becomes so exhausting. And I was tired, Marietta. I became very, very tired emotionally and physically of just every day struggling to try and figure out what people are actually saying around me.
Sure. And then, Sharona, I've heard you say that hearing loss, whatever the cause, affects one's cognitive strength. Could you explain that, please?
This is a big one. This is a huge one for me, and it's probably one of the number one reasons why I really wanted to have this conversation with you, and I was so excited when you asked about it. Marietta, on a personal, I think it's always important for me to share personally and then to give the science and the statistics of the world. From the one stroke I had to the next stroke, so if we think that that's 11 months, it's not even a big time period. When we compared my two MRIs, there was already sign of brain atrophy. And it was extremely upsetting for me and hugely alarming. And because this is my field of study, I just thought, how is it possible that cognitively there's, I can already see the decline on the MRI? And there's many reasons why you have brain atrophy, but I'm still very young. And there shouldn't be, in such a short period, a sign of a significant brain atrophy. And then I thought, no, this is going to be where I set my expectations. So if we look at the science, the NIH-funded research by a team led or co-led by Dr. Frank Lin, and he's from the Johns Hopkins University. So what he did is they enrolled about 1,000 adults in the ages ranging from 70 to 85 in this clinical trial. And then they compared the rate of cognitive decline over a three-year period between those who did and didn't receive hearing aids. And those participants recruited were also from the heart health study. And they, of course, would have more risks and factors for developing dementia, including being older and having faster rates of cognitive decline than those in the general community. And then the researchers randomly assigned participants to one of two interventions. About half received hearing aids and instruction on how to use them, and the other half were assigned to a health education program focused on promoting healthy aging. Now, both those groups received follow-up visits every 6 months to reinforce that training. And before the start of that study, annually for 3 years, all participants took a battery of tests to measure their cognitive functioning. So in a nutshell, we have people that are under this umbrella, they're getting all the help they're needing, And then we looked at the results that were published in, if I'm not mistaken, July 2023 in the publication of The Lancet. And here's the interesting thing. People who received the hearing aids reported substantial improvements in communication abilities over the course of the study. And those in the health education group, as expected, did not experience improvements in hearing and communication. Now, the statistics showed, and this is what's really crazy, those who received hearing aids had an almost 50% reduction in the rates of cognitive decline compared with the health in the health education group.
Goodness.
And that's big. That's huge. So the big thing here, Mariette, is when we start constantly asking and saying, sorry, can you repeat that? Or, listen, sorry, I didn't hear you. So please, listeners, if you're struggling to hear, go for your hearing test. The moment you start improving your hearing, that's when we start building new neural pathways. And those areas in our brain that stopped working start connecting again. Mariette, and this is why I had such a long journey with my surgeon. Right towards the end, just before the surgery was about to happen, I was chatting to him, and he had reservations about the surgery for me because I had such damage to my ear. And eventually I asked him, I said, what are your expectations for my surgery, Garth? What are your expectations? And he said, 100% hearing. And I said, but those aren't my expectations. Ask me, what are my expectations? And he's like, okay, Sharona, what are your expectations? I said, I want my brain to start connecting and growing again in the areas that are dying off. I want my brain to hear noise and sounds again that it hasn't heard in 4 years, so that those paths can start connecting new neural pathways, so that my brain can start growing again. I need to know that there's not going to be further cognitive decline. And then he's like, okay, that is not what I saw coming. That is not what I thought your answer was going to be. And if that's the reason, then yes, 100%, we can do that. But he was worried that I thought I'm going to hear everything 100% again. I've never had that expectation. I've never thought I'm going to hear 100% again. That was never the expectation behind my surgery. It was to say, listen, it's a bonus if I can hear something. But if there's sounds, there's a difference between sound and speech. If my brain can hear sounds, even though I struggle with speech, it still keeps growing. And this is the cognitive conversation. So not just does research show that it's the quickest way to reverse dementia is for you to have your hearing tested and to go for hearing aid assistance, but it's preventative. And Mariette, it's extremely frightening if we see on an MRI how quickly our brains can start shrinking. And this is, I'm hoping that someone out there hears this. Please don't leave it. If you're struggling to hear, go immediately, because it's so preventative and our brains are resilient, and man, our brains can start mapping and our brains can start growing again.
Yeah. If ever there were an excellent reason, I suppose that would be it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And just to reframe, Sharona, we're now talking about hearing loss. And you were talking about this study that offered to the one group that offered hearing aids. And within the context of our conversation today, you were in the position where a hearing aid would be of no use to you.
Yes, we tried the traditional hearing aid, and because of where the damage was to my ear. So this is so complicated, and I don't have the complete technical know-how, the biology. But just to briefly explain that my ear, the left ear that was completely deaf, and my right ear can hear a little bit. So we're not focusing on that one. We're just focusing on the one that's completely cannot hear, and where all the damage happens. So that's also where all the distortion of sound is happening. No matter what fancy. And if I look, these hearing aids are about 130,000 rand. That's what the top of the range. And when they tested and trialed, they trialed these really expensive ones. It did absolutely nothing for my hearing. It, in actual fact, it created such frustration. It made me very anxious. It was creating more distortion, and they test you with both. So I think that's also important to know, that you never just go for one hearing aid on the one ear. You test for both. And for the amount of trial, I was getting more frustrated. And I just thought, no, this is it's actually creating anxiety in me. It made me hear things worse. And it created more distortion. And now if you think about it, it makes so much sense, because the way I hear now through this vibrant sound bridge, that's what it's called, is through bone conduction. I don't hear through my ear. I hear through a receiver that sends the sound frequencies to the bone, to the vibration through the bone. So my whole ear is completely disconnected. So for some that are very demotivated because a traditional hearing device doesn't work, and I think that's where they stop trying, because it doesn't work. So when you see your audiologist and they do all the tests, very important that your first points of call will always be your audiologist. And I think sometimes this is where we get it wrong. You go to your ENT, but your ENT needs all the information that only an audiologist, a good audiologist, can give. And that audiologist actually does bone conduction sound testing. And she immediately picked up that, hey, I can hear way better sound via the bone than sound via the ear. So that gave them hope that this procedure would be successful to a certain extent. And I think just don't give up if a traditional hearing aid or the one that you buy from an online store, that's not the way to go. You are going to be more frustrated and more demotivated. You need to go to an audiologist. And if you are on a medical aid, most medical aids look at with high favor at these devices. It's similar to the cochlear implant. It's just a different part of the ear that gets connected. And it's a journey that's worthwhile journeying. There are going to be frustrations. There's a lot of paperwork, and there's a lot of ticks that need to be ticked, and there's a lot of scans that you go for. You go for a CT scan that is a specialized scan, and then you go for an MRI. So they do a lot of research and a lot of testing before they can see if you are a candidate, and it's worth it. So it's not as easy as just getting a plug-and-play hearing device, but if that is not your way to go, and you're willing to have this journey and go to a qualified surgeon who works with these implants, then do it. You're not going to look back.
So did this middle ear implant become an option because you heard about it from an audiologist, or how did it fit into the time frame of the first stroke, the second stroke, and then the implant?
So after the second stroke, and when I saw that this brain atrophy was a very big thing for me, and I thought, I don't know why I thought that I was going to be a cochlear implant candidate, I reached out to a cochlear implant patient here in my town, and I asked, could we please have coffee? So myself and my husband had coffee with this gentleman and his wife, and we sat around the table. It was hilarious because I was struggling to hear. So it was very funny. My husband, he has been my ears for the last few years. So when we'd say something, I would turn to my husband because I couldn't always lip read nicely what he was saying. And then he would tell me. And the wonderful thing is, while I was sharing my story and he was sharing some of his story, our spouses would look at each other and go, yes, that's exactly what she's experiencing. And yes, that's exactly what he experienced. And I was so tearful. For the first time, I just felt I wasn't alone. Because no one could understand, and this Wimmy could also understand the noise in my head.
Oh.
So, I was so overwhelmed and so tearful. You probably thought I'm completely emotionally unstable, but just that meeting with coffee, and we sat at the nursery, For the first time, I didn't feel isolated. They're considerably older than what my husband and I are. And I think that's also a misconception, is we think that people that have hearing challenges are, you know, in the 70s. But no, this can happen to anybody. And when he then actually gave me the information of his surgeon, and that is how this amazing journey started, was a conversation with someone that had had a cochlear implant a year prior, and they gave me information and I reached out to the surgeon. So no, it actually did not come from the audiologist at all. And that is why I think we must know that this is a team thing. You need to speak to your audiologist and say, which surgeon do you work with? And then there's also different implant specialists. Specifically, my implant is through a company called Medel. And that's another thing. That's the next person in your team. So when I made the appointment with a surgeon, and before the time they asked me to do a whole lot of scans and tests, and when I got there and he sat down without preamble, he said, Sharoni, you're not a cochlear implant candidate because your cochlea actually looks really good. But there's a different, what we can do is you are a candidate for a middle ear implant. And then he said something that just shattered my world. And he said, I cannot guarantee that the noise is going to go away. And I was so heart sore, because this woman with a cochlear implant told me that all the noise went away. And that was the one thing. That was the one thing I was hoping, that can the noise in my head just stop? Because I don't know how you live a life where you've just got nonstop noise in your head, and everything else has to compete with that. And that's why my right ear was struggling, because it wasn't able to compete with the interference created by this left ear. The long and the short of it is, and I'm going to fast forward, is when I woke up from surgery, you have this big bandage around your head, and I could already hear the patient next to me talking. And I kept thinking, oh, I can't hear 100%. I can hear very softly, but I am not hearing the popping and slurring and this, you know, these weird sounds in my head. And I thought, it's probably because I've got this bandage around my head. And a few days later, the big bandage came off and my husband was sitting chatting to me, and I looked at him and I said to him, my lovey, there's no noise in my head. And I couldn't understand. I'm like, but I'm not even switched on yet. So you must know, you only get switched on 6 weeks later. Literally, I just have this cut in my head. The device has been implanted, but I'm not switched on. The receiver is not switched on yet. I must heal. But why is it now that I do not have this weird, horrible sounds going off in my head? And we thought, gosh, this is just bizarre, but beautifully bizarre. It's amazing. So when I told my surgeon and my audiologist, I said, listen, it's already a success. I'm not even switched on yet, but something really good happened here, because I don't know what and how you disconnected what of my ear, but I'm not hearing this wild, crazy noise in my head. So I was already at such peace before I even received my Samba device. I was such a happy chappy. And then in the 6 weeks of healing, I realized, but hey, my right ear is pretty good. I can hear, if I have to focus, I can actually hear on what people are saying, because it's not competing with the noise. So, Mariette, I don't know. We are also uniquely designed. I don't know if that's going to be the same for someone else, but that happened for me. And I was just really so, so happy with that. It really was a miracle for me.
Mm. Before we come to the switching on, Sharoni, could you briefly just describe what is done during the middle ear implant?
You know what? I'm going to explain the little bit that I know. And I think each person, the complexity of probably each surgery might be different. But you go in, it's, for me, it wasn't a day procedure. I do have a little bit of medical history, which we won't go into much, but the complexity of blood clots and of just not always reacting the best to anesthetics. So I did stay in overnight, but some people go in the morning and they come out in the evening already. That's how quick and easy it can be. I was just kept under observation. So you go in, they cut, if you picture behind your ear, from the beginning of your ear right down to the bottom. So it's right around the ear, and then they insert the prosthetic. So they insert it. I don't know on which part of the ear. I don't know how to explain that. I do know that the surgeon said of all my years trauma to my ear, I had wonderful scar tissue, which really stood me in good stead for the device to be implanted. So that was good. I just woke up, and then all of a sudden you can. It is a bit freaky, I'm not going to lie. I am still getting used to feeling the device under my skin. It protrudes quite a bit. You don't see it because I've got hair. And I also did lose some hair. So there is a big patch of hair. You don't see it unless I'm wearing my hair up. But that is, there will always be a compromise. And for me, the patch of no hair and the weirdness of this device, it gets easier. And I think, you know, when I spoke to the Wimmy who had his cochlea, he said within a year, that will probably be a lot less protrusive. You won't feel it as significantly as what you feel it now. So he does help me a lot. It helps. And I often speak to his wife because I don't always want to phone that Wimmy. But, you know, she did say to me that, listen, no, it does. Within a year, that doesn't stand out as much, or you don't feel it as much as what you feel it straight after surgery. And I think the best to actually see physically what happens under the skin is to visit the Medell website. And I don't know if you maybe want to put a link of that. So
yes,
that is
Med. Let's do that.
Yeah. I think Medell, because they've got lovely little illustrations, and I think they will explain it way better than my very basic measures now.
Yeah. And so that means they cut open, they insert, what do you call it?
It says prosthesis. So that's the whole device that has got a magnet, and that also conducts to the bone. And then this receiver that I have that just plonks on top of my head also has a magnet. So then that magnet clicks to this magnet that's in my head now, and then it receives the sounds from outside my head, and it ship goes inside via bone to my brain, and bam, that's how I hear now.
Okay, so the prosthesis is behind your ear, and the receiver, that is something separate.
Yes, so you've got two parts. So I've got a little Samba, and you can also see that very nicely on the website. And maybe I can even, for this purposes, let's see if I can take a little photo of how it sits on my head for you and send that to you.
Thank you.
So that is tiny. It's tiny. It's got a little battery in it. So you can picture the size of what could people relate to. A 3/4, you know, a little matchbox. Mm. It would be smaller than a matchbox.
Oh.
And that sits on my hair. So that sits like a magnet. So when you bring it close to my head, it goes plunk, and it goes and sits on top of my head. And that pretty much is how I hear. So that's when you get switched on, you get that device that sits on your head. And that's all you have. It's not like a cochlea. It doesn't go from there into my ear. It's just a tiny little round disc, and it sits there, boom, on your head. That was also a process of learning. They had to, after a few weeks, change the magnet strength because I was developing a pressure sore on my scalp. I didn't realize immediately, and then the representative from Medell explained to me that in that area we don't have a lot of nerves. So I just felt heat. I felt quite a lot of heat on my head. But if you live in Richards Bay, there's always heat. Mm. So I didn't immediately realize, but wait, this is not actually just heat. This is discomfort. So when we saw that a pressure sore was forming, then they changed the magnet strength so that it's not so very strong against your scalp. And so that also forms part of the rehab. That's how you learn to figure out what strength magnets your body can handle, what volume and frequencies your brain can handle. And it's all part of you journeying with your audiologist and then with a representative from MedEl. So I've had a wonderful experience with MedEl and the lady. She's also a qualified audiologist. She actually is in surgery with the surgeon when they implant. So you have someone that makes sure that the device and the prosthesis is inserted correctly. And she also drives down to Richards Bay every time I have an appointment. And she's with my audiologist to make sure that I'm using the Samba correctly, that everything is still, you know, the way it should be. And I've just had a wonderful experience with her. I had no idea that she would be so hands-on throughout this process. So if we zoom out, we have three people. You have your ENT surgeon, you have your audiologist, and then you have the MedEl representative as well, who's qualified in audiology. And she journeys with you throughout this entire process as well.
Thank you, Sharona. And now let's get to the first switching on. Was that 5 or 6 weeks after the procedure?
It was 6 weeks post-surgery, and it was phenomenal. My husband went with me. They pop this little device. You don't even feel it on your head. And they were talking. I couldn't hear because my back was to them. And the next moment, Layla turned the chair and she I could read her lips. And she said, okay, we're going to switch you on. And the next moment when I heard her, I couldn't believe that I could hear her tone. I could hear her voice. And when I answered back, I could hear my voice without the distortion. And it was just, it was such a revelation. It was a beautiful moment. I've actually got a small video on my social media platform of where they actually switched me on because they wanted to do a recording. And it was phenomenal. And then I got the fright of my life for the next few days because just when I pick up a tissue, all of a sudden I can hear the sound of a tissue or driving home. I can't believe that a flicker sounds so loud. Or when I closed the boot for the first time, I jolted because I'm like, wow, I can't believe that's the sound of the boots. And when I walk in the house, I said to Dawn, do you always hear me walking like that? Why is that these shoes are so loud? And when the first time when our auntie dog came past, I almost ducked into my bed. I got such a big fright. So it's amazing that, I mean, these are sounds that I knew, but for so many years, I hadn't heard them. And all of a sudden, and that is also very overstimulating, and that's what rehab looks like. So that, I think, is probably going to be your next question, is what does rehab look like? Mm. And sound rehab is exactly that. It's every time I would hear a new sound, I would just sit in it for a moment. I would sit in the discomfort because sometimes it's just very loud. And then I would just gently like tell my brain, okay, that is the aeroplane. That's the aeroplane taking off. Or, okay, that you hear is the next door neighbor's leaf blower. Oh my goodness, the leaf blowers. Mm. The leaf blowers are crazy. So, and that is how we actually start mapping new neural pathways. And that was the very reason why I really pursued the surgery. Mm. So they don't allow you, like with traditional hearing aids, you do have an app on your phone to your device that you can adjust it. I'm not in that stage of my rehab yet where I have the app on my phone. I've chosen to sit in all the discomfort of sound because that will help me. Just I remember when I had my knee replacement, rehab was a killer. You sit in the discomfort. You sit and you have to learn for those muscles to work again, and your brain is no different. So I still don't have the app on my phone because I am concerned that I would be tempted to turn the volume down. Mm. But that is not how my brain is going to learn. So the goal is for me to sit around a table with a whole lot of friends and family and not want to die every time someone's knife touches their plate. Mm-hmm. Then you know that your brain has settled into that sound and it's a normal sound for it now. Then you know, okay, your brain has adjusted to that. But can you imagine if you make it easy and start dipping the volume, it's going to take longer for that, for your brain to get used to that sound. So to make sure I'm not tempted to do that, we have not at all loaded the app. And all the frequencies that they allow into your brain, your rehab, I first thought they start switching frequencies up or start bringing in new volumes, but it's not like that. It's actually when you go for your follow-up, they ask you, what could you not cope with? What could you not cope with? And let's see if we can adjust accordingly. And I said, no, I'm fine. I don't want you to adjust anything. Now it's almost time for me to go for my third appointment. And I can tell you that there are a few things that I am struggling with. And one of the things that the other day I actually took my device off was I was driving to Durban, and the sound of the highway it was just so loud, and it was also pelting down with rain. So the rain plus the sound of the tar, which is usually quite loud as it is, was making me so nervous whilst I was driving. It was upping my anxiety. And I just reached to my head, and the moment I took my samba off, the world became quiet. The world became like I knew it to be. And for that moment, I just needed that quiet because I thought I can't compete with this tremendous rain and the sound of the road. And so I need to still learn how to cope through that. But at that given moment, navigating traffic and the sound became just too much. So that's something that I still need to work on. And that's, there will always be one or two things. But the most amazing thing in all of this is I feel safe again. And I think this is another big point for why do we do these surgeries. So the one is, yes, we want to fight cognitive decline. The second biggest reason for me was I need to feel safe again. My husband and I go and walk every afternoon and do on walks. When we hear a car, when he has a car, he comes behind me and he'll just tap so that I know where the car is coming from. So I might eventually hear the car slowly approach, but I can never know if it's ahead of me or behind me. And the wonderful thing now when we go and walk and I have my samba, I will tell him, I can hear a car and it's going to come from the front around the corner. I can actually differentiate if the sound's in front of me, on the side of me, or behind me, where I had lost that for years. So I never knew when eventually I hear sound, I couldn't hear where it is. And sometimes I would only feel someone when they're almost on top of me. And then you will jolt. So you constantly get a fright and you constantly, your adrenaline's pumping because you feel unsafe. So it's wonderful for me now to hear someone approach before I see them. And that has been a big one as well.
You know, the thing, apart from all of this that you've just explained, the thing that I keep on thinking about, and I've been thinking about it since you and I spoke about the stroke, before the implant was even on the horizon, was the fact that you, as an international speaker, could not hear yourself when you spoke to audiences. How has that changed now?
It has been phenomenal. So I haven't done an event since. I haven't done an event since September because you know, it's been through my quiet time, but it has been remarkable that I can hear my voice again. I think that number one, we never thought I'd be able to hear my voice again. So I think you get so used to just making sure you're anchored in purpose. And I knew that no matter what, no matter how hard it is to speak, and hear distortion through a microphone, because of course, when you address people, the microphone made it a lot worse for me, and it made the pain in my head a lot worse. And the most beautiful thing now is in the work that I do, when I now meet clients that I have never actually really heard their voice. So when either online or at practice, when I, now that I'm switched on, meet someone and I'll hear their voice and their tone, and I'll get such a shock, and I'll think, oh my goodness, that's not at all how I thought this person would sound. And Mariette, you know what, whether you're a speaker or whatever you are, but I'm also a mom, and being a mom is so important to me, and it will always be my first and foremost port of call. And when I got switched on and I came home, you know, our youngest son, you know, he's 18, and when he got so excited and he was talking to me, and I just felt the tears sting my eyes, because he sounds like his dad. Mm. You know, he doesn't sound like that young Luke whose voice I remembered. And I just looked at him and I thought, sure, your voice is so, you're like a grown man now. And I hadn't heard that. 4 years is a big difference to a young man's voice. So yeah, that was very emotional.
I can't even imagine, you know, having 4 years where you are actually out of reach of that sort of experience.
It is. And I would want this beauty and this rediscovery, I would wish this for anybody that's feeling hopeless in their hearing journey. I really want people to know there's hope. And no matter what it looks like, and no matter what the intervention looks like, I think we're blessed with amazing surgeons and doctors worldwide, and especially in South Africa, that I just wish that these wonderful little golden nuggets and this golden thread of my life can just extend to every person's heart, no matter where they are based, via this podcast or whatever shape and form, that they can know that there is a way to hear a loved one's voice again.
A quick note on what I do. I'm a content entrepreneur creating podcasts and articles on living a happier and healthier life by interviewing coaches, therapists, and other wellness experts from over the world. You'll find this content on my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za, and it's there to help you find just the right helping professional when you need one. This section, Up Close and Personal, on my website offers you a glimpse of the person behind many of the experts I feature. If you're a wellness expert keen on getting more in-person or online clients, or creating worldwide awareness of an issue close to your heart, let's talk about co-creating a podcast or article, or perhaps featuring you in a South African magazine. You'll find more information under Services on my website. To each listener, no matter your age, occupation, or where you live, how about creating your very own personal audio recording with me as a one-of-a-kind gift to someone you deeply care for? In this private interview with me, you can express your love for your partner, leave a legacy to your children or grandchildren, honor your mum or dad or a mentor. The possibilities are endless. To find out more, just click on Gift Podcasts on my website. Now, back to my guest. I want to ask you, Sharona, to tell us about the role your faith played in this whole journey and still does.
Hugely. I think most people know that I'm Christ-centered. And for me, the most important thing, and it's so funny because everybody wants to pray for you. Everybody wants to have some form of intervention. And I would always say, you know what? Thank you. You can pray for me no matter where you are. You can always stand in the gap for me. I will never not take prayer. I didn't want a public platform of, you know, people coming to lay hands on me, and it made me feel quite uncomfortable. I just always thought, I don't need a public display of people sometimes forcing their faith on me or forcing their ideas on me. So it became a very personal journey with the Lord for me. And my prayer looked different to what I think people would have thought I'm praying. I never prayed for my hearing to come back. That was never my prayer. My prayer was to always just be anchored in my purpose and in knowing that my purpose on earth is to be able to touch someone's life, be it in their mind or in their heart, and for people to feel safe and welcome in my presence. That's my purpose. And be that in a corporate environment, in learning and development, or be that when a broken heart is sitting in front of me in practice, I need to feel safe and welcome in my presence. And I can do that whether I can hear or not. Yes, it's sometimes more exhausting. So my prayer was, Lord, can you just help me and my perspective to stay anchored? And on the days that are heavier, for me to remember my why. And that was my prayer. My prayer was just one day at a time. And on a bad day, not to try and fix it, not to try and surround myself with toxic positivity, but to just say, okay, this is how I feel today, to acknowledge it, not to suppress it. Because something that I'm feeling, I can relate to more in a client that is also feeling overwhelmed, whether it's physical or emotional. So I think a lot of times when people would ask me, why don't you pray for people to come and lay hands on you, and just to, you know, and people come with their own perceived ideas of you can be healed instantly if you really want it. And I don't think people understand how you can isolate very quickly if you push your personal belief system onto someone. We journey in our faith differently, and it's for me a very personal connection with the Lord and a constant conversation just to keep me motivated, grounded, and to remember why I show up. And to always be very true and authentic when I'm having a bad day. It's not always going to be a good day. It doesn't mean my faith is not strong. No. It's just that in the times that I'm weak, to say, you know what, Lord, actually, this is too much for me. So I'm not going to expect miracles today. I'm not going to expect to be a superhuman. But can you just remember and help me to make sure that those that come into my space feel safe, and that you will help me with my knowledge and wisdom today, so that whatever I do today is still in alignment. And that was and has been and probably will always be my journey with the Lord, is just to keep it private. It's a very, I want to say it's sacred space. And sometimes because I'm a little bit in the public eye, people want to make it a public thing. And I don't agree with that. For me personally, that is not what I want. I prefer, if you want to pray for me, I love that. But you don't need to do that on a public forum. You can do it in the sanctuary of your room. If I come into your mind, I love that you pray for me and stand in the gap. I think that is sometimes where I felt a tremendous conflict with people from faith perspectives. But for me, I'll always believe that God stands by me, whether I've lost my hearing, didn't lose my hearing. Look how the Lord ensured that I have the right medical team. So for my faith, I can see God in the hands of the surgeon, of the audiologist, of the hospital staff, all of them. it all came together for good. And for me, that's where I see the Lord.
Thank you, Sharona. I still want to ask you about your book, Honor Your Capacity, that you published last year.
That was just an amazing experience. It's my second book. And what I realized was it also was a book that came together very quickly. It is always still my personal sharing, my personal journey. And the whole purpose of the book is to help readers with emotional regulation. So I experience and I take the readers through different emotions, a journey through different emotions. The emotions that I realize most of my clients, when they sit in front of me, struggle with, and they don't always know how to understand and how to navigate. It's not talk therapy. I first share a little bit personally how I myself have struggled with some of those biggies. And then I take them through the journey of understanding the science. So it's a lot of neuro coaching. It's practical exercises. So it's as if you're sitting on the couch with me and we're having a chat. And I realized I can't get to 100,000 people in a year. But when I publish something and it sells, you have me in the palm of your hand and you have me talking to you in a time where you have the capacity to read. And it's literally like I'm sitting doing coaching with each reader. And we were quite blown away because I decided to do a pre-launch and then do the actual book launch at my annual conference, Boldly Be. And the pre-launch went so exceptionally well that I eventually had to stop. And I said, whoa. I think when we hit 1,000 sales in a space of 2 weeks, I said, okay, wait, let's now put the pre-launch on pause and we do the actual launch at Boldly Be, which went very, very well. And it's just been a wonderful experience. It is available at some of the large bookstores across the country, and it's also available on Amazon. And I've kind of let it go now. I'm like, those that are needing it will find it. I'm not one to hustle too much. Once I've done a publication, I do quite a bit of marketing and then I let it go. I'm not one of those that's constantly going to put something out there and go, you know, this is the book that's available. I'm like, those that need to find it will find it. And the lovely thing is this with this book, I saw a picture in my head that I really wanted on the cover. And I couldn't find anything similar. And eventually I reached out to my eldest son, Daniel. I'm like, listen, my boy, this is what I have in mind. And I sent something to him and he played around on his iPad and he sent it back. And yeah, how beautiful is it that the cover was a collaboration between my eldest son and myself? So I always thought it's something special and it's something that is a gift that can keep giving. And I'm trusting those that are needing to be inspired to help regulate the emotions, they will find the book.
Yes, indeed. Sharona, where can people learn more about your work or follow you?
On the website's always the easiest way. It's sharonad.com. And then, of course, they're welcome to follow me on Instagram, on LinkedIn or Facebook. And it's Sharona Danhauser.
Thank you. And I'll attach the link to your website to the podcast.
Thank you so much.
Are you ready for your fun question?
Always. I can't. My toes are curling with delight to hear what's coming today.
It's going to be very easy for you because if I'm not mistaken, you're a huge rugby fan.
We were. We went to France to watch the World Cup and it was very delightful.
And you had delightful posts on social media. Now, my question is, if you were an accomplished rugby player, which position would you prefer and why?
Oh, gosh. I want to be my pimpy. I want to be my pimpy. So whatever position my pimpy is, okay, that's me. That is me. But it's like it's not even a position. I just want to be my pimpy. He brings me huge delight. He makes me laugh. He is just the epiphany of resilience. And from his life story, right, to the entertainment he brings on the field. So whatever, and you know, he can also change position. Mm. So that's why I'm like very cautious to say what position he's in, because he has changed a few times. So I'm like, no, I'm just Sharona equals Mopimpi. I think that is, that's the quickest, easiest response. Yeah.
That is delightful. So thank you for that one. And thank you, Sharona, for sharing your journey so lucidly and openly. And I must say, I've told you before, I have the deepest respect for you and what you do and what you stand for. So may your work go from strength to strength.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your kind words. And thank you once again for just reaching out and journeying in this new story with your readers and your listeners, and whichever shape and form they decide to connect, it's always an honor. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us. I'd love you to subscribe to this podcast series. And if you found this episode helpful, please share it with someone you care about. Go to my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za, for this episode's podcast notes and for free podcasts and articles on how to live a happier and healthier life and have more fulfilling relationships. To follow me on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn, just search for Mariette Sneeman Journalist. The podcast series, Calm, Clear and Helpful, is produced by me with original music by Mart-Marie Sneeman. Catch you next Tuesday at 9:00.